Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Hi, everyone. First order of business today, you need to know about a new feature of the Social Network Show that will, I hope, help me to get to know you. Until now, we've been inferring the makeup of our listening audience, but now it's time to ask you. I'm going to give you the URL where you can tell me who you are in general terms. This is especially for you, listeners at the Social Network Show. The questions come from the folks who deliver our show to you, Libsyn. Lib as in liberated, syn as in syndication. Please note, the first question is optional. This is where it asks you for your email address. Fill that in if you wish to, but otherwise just skip it and go right on to choose from each one of the six basic population categories listed. Now, this might take up to 35 seconds to do, but I'm hoping you'll find it worthwhile. Ready? Here it is. survey.libsyn.com/the Social Network Show. All one word, of course. survey.libsyn.com/the Social Network Show. Thank you. I look forward to hearing from you. Now, your guest today, Mr. David Brian Polgar, is an attorney, a college instructor, a blogger, a TEDx speaker, and the communications director of CopilotFamily.com, which provides a worry-free way to set sensible boundaries on smart devices for families. His Twitter handle is @TechEthicist. I'm sure you'll want to join me in welcoming Mr. Polgar to the Social Network Show. David, thanks so much for joining us again today.
Well, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Same here. You have been writing and speaking lately, I know, about the impact of being overplucked and how the impact that can have on the quality of our thinking. Now, first of all, can you explain what you mean by being overplugged?
Sure. Yeah, overplugged is kind of the antithesis of being unplugged. What I didn't like about a lot of the terms being utilized is it kind of seemed like an either or. Either you were so kind of frazzled mentally through technology, or you were unplugged. And I said, well, there's got to be kind of a term for it, this qualitative state. So I oftentimes work with Dr. David Greenfield of the Center for Internet and Tech Addiction, and together we kind of coined this term to be overplugged. And that's this kind of qualitative feeling when you feel mentally frazzled, when you feel so plugged in that oftentimes it is taking away from other kind of analog life aspects, that you're so kind of plugged in, let's say, to your social network that you don't have much of a true authentic social life. Being overplugged is where instead of maximizing your life through technology, you're actually deteriorating certain kind of functions of it. Really, our goal for a lot of using technology should be to kind of increase the amount of friends we have in real life, not just increase our virtual friends and decrease our authentic friends. But if we can utilize social media to become more social, then that's a positive, and then that person would not be overplugged.
Ah, well, that makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate you letting us know about Dr. Greenfield. He sounds like a very interesting guy at the Center for Internet and Technology Addiction.
Yeah, and Dr. Greenfield has done some amazing work in his actually popularized the connection between dopamine being released through our tech devices and kind of the quote-unquote tech addiction kind of aspect. So originally wrote about tech addiction back in 1999, a book called Virtual Addiction. So really been kind of around for a long period of time. It's really kind of showcased this has been a struggle over the last couple of years, really for how we utilize technology in a way that we control it instead of being controlled by it.
Interesting. Well, maybe we can talk a bit more about that biological link in the second half, but in right now I want to know if you can tell us about what the connection is between constant use of communication technology and our thinking ability.
Right. Well, the way that I like to think about it as being connected is we want to achieve right now kind of wisdom in the age of Twitter, as I personally like to say. But in order to do that, when you think about wisdom, wisdom is a deep level of thinking. It doesn't just kind of happen through tweeting. You don't become wise, right? That's the surface level of information. That's the surface level of information. But to get to wisdom, you need to actually go through multiple steps. It goes from information, then it's synthesized to knowledge, and then later on, through connections, making those associations to critical thinking or wisdom. So that means that it's this three-step process of actually reflecting upon this constant flow of information that we're getting from our devices, but to occasionally step away from this fire hose of information and reflecting upon it in a way that it gets a little deeper. This is the term that oftentimes we call shallow thinking, from a book called The Shallows by Nicholas Carr, right? Uh-huh. That we tend to be very surface level thinkers because we're so caught up in the here and now of the constant flow of information and constantly reacting that we're never getting to kind of this important level of thinking where we're stepping away and reflecting upon it.
Yeah, it takes some time to consolidate what we hear and what we learn, and then to get to the point of how that impacts other things. What kind of state of mind do you think is required for that?
Well, the state of mind really is going to be a certain level of kind of defocusing on the immediate. It's really, and they're doing some studies on it, is that in order to kind of get to this more creative state where we're making these connections and we're having deep thoughts, we can't be so focused on the immediate, what they call the kind of the executive functions of the brain. We need to actually kind of defocus our brain and to let it to make these unusual connections. In other words, when we have our devices, there's nothing wrong with having a device in your hand, but what the problem is, if you can never step away, then you're never going to get to that point where you do anything with this information. Mm-hmm. So right now, we don't have an information problem. We have a problem turning that information into something that is usable, something that is meaningful. The deeper level of thinking is actually providing meaning to the information that we're consuming. What we're struggling with, what we're all struggling with, is to create an environment that is conducive to a deep level of thinking.
Well, it's often been said that physicists, for example, sometimes come up with their most brilliant insights when they're at the beach on vacation.
Oh my God, and that's me in particular. I love coming up with ideas at the beach, at looking at the ocean. They even call it blue therapy, right? the therapeutic nature of looking at the ocean, because then you're stepping away. The same thing is that a lot of times when you ask somebody where they get their best thoughts, they say, well, actually in the shower. Well, why is that? Because in the shower, you know what you're not doing? You're not reading Mashable articles. You're not reading updates. You're not seeing the latest video. You're actually unplugged for that temporary period of time. In the same time, it's very relaxing. You're getting this kind of therapeutic water. It's hitting you. You're comfortable. You're letting your brain kind of wander and wonder. That's going to be the key part, is to find that mental space for your deep thoughts, for your aha moments. When you think of deep thinkers and you visualize that in your brain, nobody is thinking of that guy walking around with a Bluetooth in his ear, right? You're conceiving of somebody like Einstein or Newton. They were daydreamers. Right? They were deep thinkers. So you take somebody like Newton sitting beneath the apple tree. Well, now we've replaced that apple that he was examining and thinking about gravity, and now we've replaced it with an Apple iPhone. And instead of thinking about gravity, we're just thinking about, we're actually not thinking, we're just consuming the information off of our Apple iPhone, and then we wonder why we don't have these deep, great thoughts. Well, again, there's nothing wrong with the iPhone, mm-hmm. but there's the over-reliance sometimes of technology and our kind of inability to step away from it occasionally to really maximize our thinking. And that's the big movement right now, is to say, let's use technology in a different manner. Let's change our relationship in a way that we can get the benefits and reduce some of the negative aspects.
Okay. Well, coming up next on the Social Network Show, David Ryan Polker will explain what we might be missing if we are forever attending to our smartphone, and some of the research that's been done about the sense of fear of missing out, FOMA. And so we'll look forward to some further thoughts, David.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
As internet technology advances, so does the threat of cybercrime. And the instant you go online, you become vulnerable to dangers such as identity theft, computer viruses, phishing, spyware, and more. In times like these, we must all protect ourselves from cybercrime. Antivirus software, firewalls, and security patches are just the beginning. Never open suspicious emails, only navigate to trusted sites, and change your passwords every 90 days. Backup important files to external storage devices. Tell anyone who uses your computer to be vigilant when downloading from the internet. Keep your kids safe on the internet. Teach them never to give out personal information or post information about their school or extracurricular activities. Installing parental control software and monitoring their computer are all good ways to prevent cybercrime. To learn more about cybercrime, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where David Ryan Polker is telling us about how doing nothing can increase our creative thinking. So we have the advantage, some advantages to just having time to veg out. Just zone out and not have to be constantly taking in new material, new facts, new information, etc. So that's kind of nice, really, to be given that permission to, you know, just, yes, it's very good. It's essential to do nothing once in a while. So, David, when you talked about being the best thoughts happening, basically being alone with our thoughts, it's when we're not busy doing something else, although a lot of people would say that is when they are bored. So
right.
How do you respond to that?
Well, you have to not be afraid of being bored. Boredom right now in 2015 moving forward is a bad rap. We think of it as a failure in planning, right? If a parent is told by their child, I'm bored, then the parent says, my God, what have I done? I'm a terrible mother. Here's a device. Play with something. Don't tell me you're bored. I can't believe it. You know, I don't want you to go to therapy later in life. So we need to say that boredom is essential. Go back to Albert Einstein. He, as a child, we're all thinking, hey, I want my child to be like Einstein. Well, Einstein was known for looking out the window during his classes, so much to the point where the teacher said, my God, this guy's such a daydreamer. If Einstein was around in 2015, I feared what we would do with him. We would say, my God, this guy needs to be treated for something. He's not paying attention. He's bored all the time. But we need those types of thoughts. We need those types of thinking. But the problem is, and there's a lot of recent studies showcasing this, people tend to be afraid of being alone with their own thoughts. And having a device in your hand means you're never alone with your own thoughts.
Well, is there any actual evidence that people are shying away from reflective solitude?
Well, there was a great one that recently came out from the University of Virginia, and it was shocking, pun intended, what they found out, right? That 25% of women and 67% of men, get this, would rather be shocked with a jolt of electricity than to be let alone with their thoughts.
Hmm.
For only 15 minutes. And this was after they had told the researchers that they would pay not to be shocked. They didn't want to be shocked through electricity, but then when they were given a choice, you can be shocked with electricity or be alone with your own thoughts, people would rather be shocked.
Wow. Well, that's fascinating, especially the difference between men and women. The men were actually two and two-thirds times as likely to object to solitude than the women were. So no wonder we need more women in the C-suite and boardrooms, at least if there's some advantage to having time to reflect.
Exactly. Well, I think that's a huge gender advantage right there, as you bring up. You know, for whatever reason, we'll have to kind of explore that a little more. But for whatever reason, men seem to statistically at least be more prone to not wanting those times to be alone. And I think, frankly, you have to dig deep and say, well, maybe we're afraid because the mind really has a lot of recesses where it can go. You know, if I just let my brain wander, it might go in directions I love, but it might also go in directions about loved ones that are no longer here, about regrets that I have in life. I mean, it can go in a lot of different directions, but we need to kind of remove that fear to say, that's just a natural part of life. You know, like every time you're in, waiting in line at the grocery store, you can't just be afraid of just letting your brain wander for a couple minutes while you're waiting. You know, that's just a natural part of life.
So we don't necessarily have to grab a magazine and read or carry a book along with us or our iPad or get on the phone to. Yeah, it's kind of a trade-off between trying to be more efficient and just giving ourselves a time whenever it comes up. Think about that as our time to reflect. I'm going to try that.
Well, and the good thing, as you mentioned, about being efficient, it's actually, we're knowledge workers. We're not factory workers. So we don't produce a certain amount every hour.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us nowadays, it's about what we create in totality, right? So it's actually more efficient. If you want to talk about efficiency, it's more efficient to be bored, to reflect, than it is to burn yourself out and to say you're working 70 hours a week, but you're not coming up with any great innovative ideas.
Mm.
It's more efficient to step away, to take that time, because, again, we're viewing it in the aggregate. We're not viewing it in time. Nobody cares about time kind of moving forward. It's all about creative thoughts, innovative thinking, what you can do.
I have another thought, possibly creative, about that gender difference is that from a very young age, boys have a tendency to feel compelled to compete. You know,
right.
Who's going to be able to do the best wheelie or, you know, do the most daring stunt and that sort of thing. In fact, I read some fellows talking, reflecting back on that time that, you know, they opened their eyes in the morning and, you know, it was just a challenge awaiting them. Not necessarily exciting all the time is an element of fear in there. You know, am I going to be able to hold up my head in the neighborhood? And if that is the case, it's easy to see how in the work world, which is play being the child's work, and just transferring into that arena, that to be alone in your thoughts would be possibly a little, you know, I can see some reasons why that would be more scary to men than to women.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I think about it, too, a lot of girls are kind of raised with an imagination kind of behind it. If you think about kind of like a dollhouse or dolls or a cheese set, they're really all kind of based on being alone to a certain extent with imaginary characters, with your thoughts. So potentially that kind of bleeds over. Like you said, men tend to be slightly more competitively based in some sports arena where it's going to be less based on kind of being alone and kind of this imagination
mm-hmm.
with your thoughts.
Yeah, well, that's all tentative thoughts on that. I'm sure there's, some additional things to consider, but what do you think that is coming up? Now, I know you wrote an article recently that was posted on, I believe it was drgreen.com, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And that's different.
I'll have a few more. Yeah.
There's Dr. Greenfield and Dr. Green with an E on the end.
Yeah.
I thought, wait a minute, I got this confused, but they're actually two different people. And I looked at that, very interesting. We will put the link on the show recap. Mm-hmm. But you've got a guy in a boat attending to his smart device.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening around him?
This is a great photo that's making the rounds right now on the internet, where a man is glued to his smartphone. Instead of looking at a humpback whale, this majestic sea creature that is swimming right next to his boat, right? It looks like the humpback whale is going to run into his boat, and the man on the boat does not even look up, right? He's so tuned in that he's actually tuned out to really kind of the beautiful nature sometimes of life.
Mm.
And that's why I use that phrase overplug, because again, it's not about being unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
It's about knowing when to step away. So that's a prime example. There's absolutely nothing wrong with him using his smartphone when he's on his when he's on his boat. But at the same time, when he's in this location where there's humpback whales, if he doesn't know enough to put that away, then that's really detracting from really, again, the essential aspects of life by kind of realizing the inherent beauty that surrounds us. You know what, people always talk about the amazing nature of the new apps we're creating, but you know what's more amazing than that? A humpback whale. Your friends, your family, your loved ones sitting across the table, they're actually more amazing than an app. And it's saying that the technology we're creating is great, it's awesome, but it's lower on a level of values, at least to me and to a lot of people, than actual human beings and nature.
And face-to-face contact. Well, mm-hmm. Tell us about the dopamine connection.
Yeah, and this is, again, where I work with Dr. Greenfield, because he popularized this dopamine connection, and that is one of the struggles we have with balancing our technology, is that technology feels good. This is really the problem that Huxley predicted in A Brave New World that he wrote in the early 30s, was that we wouldn't be fearful of emerging technology. We would actually love it so much that we would decrease our thinking,
mm-hmm.
right? Every time a thought could come into our brain, we would just zap it away, because it's easier to be in a state of constant pleasure than it is a path of least resistance. And a lot of times, deep quality thinking relies on us not taking the easiest path,
mm-hmm.
because it's easier to have just fully online communication than to actually talk to your family and friends, right, in face-to-face, because you can have control. It's asynchronous communication. If you don't like what they're saying, you can turn it off. And that's really the struggle we have. So that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are actually being treated for quote-unquote tech addiction because of this, because it can be slightly addictive in how it feels to a person. What you really need to do is kind of retrain the brain to a large extent on the importance of kind of being detached from that. And like you mentioned earlier, kind of related to this FOMA idea, the fear of missing out. We're so afraid that we're going to miss out something important that's happening online that we end up missing out on what's happening right around us.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great kind of irony to that.
It reminds me a bit of the Skinner box with the in this case, a little rat in there that has an electrode connected to its pleasure center in its brain, and it's tapping the bar to have stimulated, and ignore everything else.
Is that it's hard for us to actually physically step away from our devices, because they feel good. They're not causing us pain. They're causing us this immediate gratification. So we've become so used to this gratification, and that's why personally I always recommend not relying solely on willpower, because your willpower is easily going to get crushed by kind of this positive feeling, this dopamine effect of our devices. Every time you get a ping, ring, or ding, it feels good. So you need to actually change your environment to make it more conducive. And a lot of times people do that through tech-free times and tech-free zones. They're really kind of set up a new environment that works a little better for quality thinking.
Kind of drag yourself out from that.
You really do. And frankly, a lot of times people say, well, why can't you just put the smartphone away? Why can't you rely on willpower? Well, we don't do that with our physical diet, do we? Right? If I know that I'm eating, too many brownies, do I keep my brownies right in front of me? Do I keep my brownie in my pocket? Now imagine if that brownie is vibrating in my pocket, and now I'm surprised that I'm eating so many brownies. Well, that's what we're doing. We're living in the proverbial candy store, and we're wondering why we're eating too much candy, because we can't get away from it. Well, how do we do that with our physical diet? You know what we do? If you're eating too many brownies, you'll say, you know what, I'm not going to buy the brownies.
You've taken a page right out of my playbook there.
we stop ourselves from having that temptation because willpower works like a muscle that gets fatigued. Huh. And we're wondering why we're so overplugged and so exhausted, because we're putting this information right in front of us and saying, I need to be balanced. That's why a lot of people are debating, I guess, the Apple Watch when that comes out. Very shortly, and how that's going to be adopted, because for a lot of people who are struggling with this, having something that's worn on the wrist that's constantly saying, oh, you've got another email. Oh, my God. I personally am not going to wear one because I get a lot of emails. You get a lot of emails. Uh-huh. But occasionally I need to create something worthwhile. My whole existence shouldn't just be replying to people. I mean, what kind of existence is that? We want to do something a little more important, I guess, at the end of the day. And a lot of those important things are about the connections we make with people right in front of us, mm-hmm. and they're about the ideas we create with our mind.
Well, thanks. Thanks so much, David. I like that, the pleasure aspect of it. I haven't really heard too much about that. Willpower, I'll remember that because of the brownies. So, well, before we close, and first of all, thanks, David, very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Shea.
And before we close, may I remind you, our listeners, to please go to survey.libsyn.com/thesocialnetworkshow. Providing your email address again is completely optional, but please do reply to the 6 questions, then click complete survey. And thanks to you, our listener and most important guest, for keeping us company on The Social Network Show. Do visit our website at The Social Network Station.com, and you will find us on iTunes, Stitcher.com, various places, and can follow us on Twitter at Social Net Show. But the most important thing today, survey.libsyn.com/thesocialnetworkshow. Thanks a lot. And please have fun and be safe online and off till we meet you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.